The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and I'm back on the road to meet our latest guest. I'm with the man who scored one of the greatest goals ever at the new Wembley Stadium. He's actually started at West Ham, but never made a first-team appearance for the Hammers, finding goals easy to come by Exeter before moving to Swindon and then Hull. He spent 5 years at Leyton Orient, which included promotion and a big FA Cup shock, 3 years at Millwall, which again included promotion, but also playoff final heartache. There was more Wembley pain at Brentford to follow before he joined Crawley, AFC Wimbledon and Burton at the end of his playing days. He led Greenwich Borough to promotion in 2016 and had an 11-month spell in charge at Ashford United. He took up his new role in September as manager of Glebe in Southern Counties East League. So it's a warm welcome to the man who always knew where the back of the net was during his playing days, with over 500 league games to his name as well. Gary Alexander joins us on the podcast this week. Start with Glebe, as I mentioned there, we're your manager now. Normally we look back on Saturday's game, but obviously you were due to play Beckenham in the Kent Senior Trophy, but the game was postponed just before kickoff.
Yeah, obviously not ideal to get to the ground and it being called off. The game was due to be played. Obviously we got told the pitch was fine at 10 o'clock. All the boys obviously travelled to ground for 1:30 to get there. Looking back, obviously we're annoyed at the time, but probably the best decision at this level. Boys have to work, boys have to, you know, get up, look after families and do what they've got to do. And if someone gets injured when the pitch is that soft, then it's not good. And obviously we'd all feel guilty if something happened. So probably the best, the right decision in the long run.
Was that a game that would have been played, say, 20 years ago?
It's probably been played this year, you know, like on worse pitches. We played Stone Market the week before and the pitch wasn't great and there was big holes in the pitch. That not being any excuse for the result, but, you know, there was soft patches on that pitch and they'd vertically drained the pitch, not filled the holes, and on another day that possibly could have been called off, you know, but that game went ahead. So, and I'm sure there's grounds in the country where teams play week in, week out on pitches like that, but obviously for my team you want the safest outcome and the ref probably made the right decision.
I was going to mention Stowe Market next. That FA VARs obviously last weekend, last 32 and you lost 3-0. What was your thoughts on the game?
Well, I think you had to be there to see it. The boys were a credit to the club, worked their socks off. We missed some chances. The boys what missed chances will be disappointed because there was clear-cut chances. And then when the goalkeeper gets MOM for the opposition, you know it's not your day, you know, like the keeper's obviously produced some quality saves. We had a number of chances and although they had chances, we created our chances, their chances, a lot of their chances came through probably misplaced passes from us and little mistakes where it gave them good chances, they didn't take them, we created plenty of chances and their goalkeeper ends up MOM, and had we have scored, I think there was only one winner.
Disappointing to go out of VARs as well because it's such a great competition if you can go a long way in it.
Yeah, look, we've had some fantastic journeys. Obviously, we've played against some good sides. We had a journey to Peacehaven, you know, and there's little memories made, you know, like the coach journey and things like that with my assistant manager opening a gate and the coach driver driving off and not understanding that stop. He was, I think he might have been Polish or something, you know, like, and he's we're saying stop, the assistant's missing, and it's a long road from Peacehaven down to the main road. Chucking it down with rain and he's chasing the coach, you know, we're saying stop, 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 and he didn't stop until we got to an off licence, so we've had to ring Damo and obviously say like, well, look, we're up here, get to the bottom of the road, turn right and we're over on the left, you know, and he's running along and missing the coach. So obviously that created good memories of the cup, and look, we're disappointed to be out of the cup, but look, it's football, you're not going to win every game, and on another day we could be in a hat, but unfortunately we're not, so we have to move on.
How are you enjoying your time at Glebe? Slightly, very new club in many respects, but finding their way into senior football now.
Yeah, I'm loving it. It's a club like on the up. It wants to progress. It's got an ambitious chairman who wants to win things, wants to be successful at that club. He's obviously been successful with the club from the way he's built it up from one team to 20 plus teams and now first team what plays in the real competitive league. So it's a good club, and as I said, I get on well with Rocky. We work hard together to try and improve the club in any way we can. This season, obviously taking over a squad, I've had a lot of changes. Brought in boys I know, some of the boys not having clubs and things like that, some of them not having pre-season, so it's been difficult. We've been playing catch up, you know, but some of our performance has been very, very good. But it's been consistency. Some haven't been so good. And again, there'd be games where we've lost, where we've missed numerous chances, and you had to be there to see sort of the chance we've missed. But it's a work in progress, and obviously we're coming to the latter end of this season. It's not often you're in three trophies after Christmas and still within a hunt of an automatic promotion if we can win all our games, and it's quite possible in the Kent League, you know. So I'm never going to rule that out, but we have to be realistic, and obviously going forward we want the club to progress. The club wants to get out of this league, so hopefully between myself, Rocky, my management staff and players who I bring in and players who we recruit over the summer can help that happen, and we can get there sooner rather than later.
I was going to say, you're seventh in the table, I think, at the moment. Are you on more the fringes, sort of looking in on the title race rather than really being part of it at the moment?
We've got two games in hand, three on some teams. If we can win them, we still have to face Beckenham in the league. We still have to play Sheppey twice. We still play Chatham. And as I said, if you can put results together and go unbeaten, which isn't impossible in this league, it's about being consistent, then we'll be in there. But it's a hard task, obviously. But listen, I'm a winner and I go into every game hoping to win. So I'm not going to say that we can't do it.
You've assembled quite a decent side down as well, haven't you? Quite a few players who have played at high level.
Yeah, obviously some boys I know, obviously some boys I've had in the past since coming into non-league. You get to meet great people, and obviously I've got to know a big pool of players. I'm quite aware, I study what goes on in non-league, so I'm aware who's good, who's not, who's loyal, who's not, and just chat to loads of different people, you know, like in the non-league circuit. I've made some great friends, and so getting to know that's very important, and hopefully that can help us and put us in good stead in the summer. And it put us in good stead when I took over at Glebe, because as you said, I've got some quality players there.
Let's look back at your playing career next, start at the beginning. Youngster at West Ham, was that right? How did that come about?
To be fair, I was about, well, I tried to sign up and join the post office. I was waiting for a form to come back. I was quite late going in. I didn't go until 17. I was playing the cup final for Vista against Fisher. I got offered to go on a, did I want to go on trial? Of course, it's every boy's dream to go on trial at 17. Back then, you probably think it's probably too late to make it, you know, like, and you got hope. I went on trial and played a game. Actually, come off injured after about, well, pretty quickly. I got a whack in the back of the head, had stitches, and you think obviously that's trial over, you know, like, and lucky enough, I came off, had the stitches, and after the game, the manager was watching. He said, "No, we're willing to offer you a scholarship," which was great. And obviously, just before the end of my scholarship, they offered me a professional, and I ended up spending nearly five years, I think, at West Ham. Getting on the bench a few times for the first team in the Prem and things like that, never making an appearance, unfortunately. But that's football, you know. And obviously, I got sent out on loan, scored plenty of goals in the youth team. We won the FA, like the Premier League Cup and Premier League youth section. Got sent out on loan to Exeter, and to be fair, never looked back then. You just want to play football once you're playing, and I had some quality players in front of me, and John Hartson, Di Canio, Trevor Sinclair, Paul Kitson. I was probably fifth or sixth choice, and just to be amongst them names was unbelievable. But having had a spell at Exeter where I scored goals in the Football League at 17, it was a dream to play football, so I just wanted to play football. It didn't matter what level, and be a professional footballer. And as I said, it was time to move on. So I sort of spoke to Harry, and he said, if we get the right offer, then we'll consider it. And a few weeks later, long and behold, there was an offer, a few offers, and they accepted one from Swindon for 300,000, and I was on the move.
When you think of the West Ham days now, how do you reflect on your time then and being in and around it, but not actually making a first team appearance for them?
So they're obviously good memories. Look, I'm from South London, but they offered me my opportunity to go and have a chance to be a professional footballer. I had a successful youth time there in the youth team, in the reserves. Met many a great friend, you know, like we went to Rome last year with a lot of the boys what were still scholars and played against the Lazio legends in the Olympic Stadium and things like that, you know. So Kenny Brown rung us up and said that we fancy a trip, a few of the youngsters, because a few of the older pros didn't fancy it, and jumped straight on it. So got many a friend, not often that I don't really see them that often anymore, but obviously with social media and that, you can get involved in a bit of banter and things like that with them. But when we do meet each other, it's great.
Do you look back now and wish you'd stayed around longer and maybe got a breakthrough, or was it, you know, as you say, you want to play those games at the time you're young, you just want to play football?
No, I don't really have any regrets in football. It's at the end of the day, I wanted to play football. I'm not one of these people to sit around if I'm not playing. I want to earn my money, to be honest, and I want to be playing football. And obviously it would have been nice to be able to get a run out in the Premiership, but look, I've got a Premiership shirt indoors. I've sub against Leicester, Everton, Leeds, you know, like some big clubs, and I don't regret anything. My dream was to be a professional footballer, and you mentioned it a minute ago, I played over 500 games, so if someone had said that to me at 16, 17, I wouldn't have believed you.
Mentioned training at West Ham then. Did you train alongside the Kenny, or did he come in after you'd gone out on loan?
No, them boys were all there. Like, as I said, look, there was some quality players. Paolo was there. As I said, Trevor, John Hartson, all unbelievable players. Ian Wright even had a spell there. Peter Shilton even turned up like to train at one point and signed, you know. So I've been lucky enough to be in and around some great players. And then obviously you had Rio, you had Frank, you had other quality players like Lee Hodges, youngsters what went on to have careers at lower leagues. And a lot of our team, I think 9 out of 11 went on to probably play over 200-300 league games, you know, which is a credit to West Ham's youth system at the time.
What's it like being a youngster with such star studied talent around you? Is it quite intimidating, I guess, in a way? Or do you look at it and just, you know, does the jaw drop during training?
No, not really. To be honest, it's one of them. It's a dream, isn't it, to be around them. You look up to them. They're idols. Obviously, we're 17, 18. John Hartson wasn't much older. He was probably three years older, 4 years older. But he's a regular first team, and you've got to strive to be that, you know. And you build relationships with him. You learn off him. You talk to him, you know. I cleaned his boots, John, so I had a good relationship with him. And still to today, if you see it, they remember you, which is great. Do you know what I mean? So you've obviously had an impact on them as well at some point in your life, you know. So it's all good. But as I said, I made many a great friend there, and I've even bumped into people like Trevor Sinclair on holiday and remembered each other and gone for a game of golf and things like that, you know. So it's great memories.
You mentioned the loan move to Exeter. How did that come about? Was that instigated by you, or was that the club saying that you needed to play some games?
No, I got a phone call. I think I got a phone call on the way home. We just played a reserve game at the baseball ground, Derby's old ground, at the baseball ground, the reserve game, and I got a phone call. I think it was off maybe the reserve team manager saying that there's been obviously an inquiry about you, about going on loan. Will it benefit? Yes, it will. It's first team football. And the next morning I was on the first train out of Paddington down to Exeter to live there for a year. So it was quite quick. It happened quite quick. Gone home. When you have to tell your mum you're moving to Exeter for a year, and your dad, they're like, wow, you know. But that's football, and I would have done anything to play football. And I went there and had a great time, met some great people again. I stayed with a family in Diggs, and it was sort of there where I probably learnt to drink.
What was it like moving away from your family, the ones that had supported you? And, you know, they could obviously see your progress at West Ham, but at Exeter, I mean, I guess not many people saw your progress.
No, to be honest, I'm quite lucky to have a family very supportive, and they was at every home game at Exeter. They was at most away games. My dad came to most away games. I've seen my dad. I've turned up at Carlisle on a Tuesday night, and I've looked over, and my dad's in the stand. You know, so they've been very supportive over my football career, which I'm really thankful for. But like, obviously going to Exeter, going home that night from Derby, and then being on the first train out of Paddington, it all happens really quick. I'm happy. Obviously, your mum's probably not so happy because she's losing her son, but it's part of football, and they have to obviously accept it because it's a dream I want to follow. And would I have had a football career had I not done so well at Exeter? Possibly not. Maybe that wouldn't have been my level. I would have had to go and find a level, but lucky enough, I managed to score goals there, which probably guaranteed me a career in the Football League.
I was going to say, your confidence must have been sky high at this point, because you scored goals throughout the season, didn't you, for Exeter? You had a great year.
Yeah, look, we started the season well. We started the season really well. We struggled as the season went on and was gradually falling down the table, but I managed to obviously keep scoring goals, and we stayed up that season in the end. We ended up in a relegation fight but managed to survive. And as I said, look, it's all good learning curves. I can gladly say I've never been relegated in my whole career. You know, I've been in a few fights, and obviously we'll get to that later on with other clubs, you know, but we managed to survive, which was fantastic, and the fans were over the moon with that. And I think they tried to keep me, but whether the price was too much, I don't know back then, because Exeter wasn't the biggest of clubs. But look, I had a great time and fond memories, and every club I've played for, I just give thanks to them for giving me that opportunity.
So was it you that then instigated the move away at the end of that season, or was it West Ham that said there was interest and you then had to make a decision?
No, I went back. I'm getting as close as I can to getting this right, but I went back. Obviously, I had pre-season, things like that. You're involved pre-season. I think I might have even made the bench a couple of times early season, but having scored obviously 19 goals a season before in the league, you're going, well, I should be out there playing in this football league. You used to sit home on the teletext, you know, like watching goal scorers come up and things like that. And like I said, I used to sit there with Dad going, one day, hopefully that's me, one day, you know. And I had the opportunity, I did it, went back, and then you're playing reserves. And in the end, you've got to look at it and look at the bigger picture. Am I ever going to play? Probably not. So you have these chats, and Harry was great about it, you know, like he was fair. It's not like John Artson was coming to the end of his career. He was 22. He still had 10, 15 years left of a football career to play. So was I going to surpass him? Probably not.
Swindon move comes about. Did you have the chance to go elsewhere, or was that the only move that was possible at the time?
No, I was linked with a few clubs. Like there was a few clubs, Reading. I'd just put pen to paper, and Cardiff phoned me up, or phoned agents up, as they do. But it was just a case of that I was going to sign for a team in League One for a lot of money in terms of a transfer fee, and it was a case of getting out there playing first team football, and hopefully I could go back up. And you know, I loved every minute of it. It's all learning and memories I can look back on.
Another relegation battle though, was it at Swindon?
We struggled. I think they'd paid out for me. I think there might have been one or two more they paid out for, and there was big expectation. It was actually Colin Todd who signed us, and he was working with Malcolm Crosby, the old Sunderland manager, and Andy King, bless him, who passed away a couple of years back, you know. And it had a good feel about it, and everyone was like sort of confident that we could challenge, but it wasn't to be. It didn't work out that way. Goals were a little bit hard to come by then, but I think Swindon fell into a little bit of money trouble, as they have done over the years. You know, like hopefully they're fine now, but over the years they've got into money troubles, and I got told that there was an offer from Hull. They'd just come out of administration, and I was going from one end of the country to the other, you know, so it's pretty mad how quickly things move.
Yeah. Did you have any hesitation about going to Hull? It's a long way from home.
No, because as I said, you do your homework, and you look at crowds and things like that, and I absolutely love Hull. Like Hull, what a place, you know. Like when I moved to Hull, obviously I had my first child with my ex-partner, George, who's obviously now playing at Millwall, and I moved up to Hull, and sort of things took their way that way. And obviously I spent just short of 2 years maybe up there. George is from around this area. It was difficult to see him, having split up with George's mum. The move, obviously, I needed to get back to London because I wanted to be as near as I could to my son growing up and see him as much as possible, you know. So that was difficult times, but I came back, and as I said, I joined Leighton Orient.
At what point did you feel, I'm a professional footballer, I've really made it? Was it the year at Exeter? Was it once you'd made a couple of moves? When did you really think, I'm a pro footballer now?
To be fair, it's not something I really thought of. You just take every game that comes. I love to score goals. When I was playing from a 9-year-old upwards, I love to score goals, you know. Like, and you go into games, people ask, are you nervous? Are you not nervous? It's just another game of football. It's like being, for me, it's probably like being an electrician, a plumber, whatever. You have good days at work, you have bad days at work, you know. And I'm either going to play well, I'm going to play bad, I'm either going to get abused by the fans, I'm either going to be loved by the fans. It's part and parcel, when you sort of learn to take that on board. But at no point did I ever think, because it could come to an end, an injury could halt your career, couldn't it, and all that. So you just take every game as it comes and enjoy the time while it lasts. And lucky for me, it spanned for probably 16-17 years and 500 games later.
So football took an attraction to move to Leighton Orient. I mean, that was obviously partly off the field, but partly on the field as well. And you seem to have a really good time there.
Yeah, my agent at the time was real good friends with Barry. And obviously, back then, you had to find the right clubs, obviously, because I'd have some big money moves, and that without being sounding big-headed, money had to be right and things like that, you know. And obviously, Barry Hearn gave me a contract offer. I moved there, and as I said, you don't know how long you're going to be there, you know. But I spent nearly 5 years there, and I was offered a new deal there, but obviously Millwall came calling, and it was a chance to go and play at a ground where I've grown 15 minutes up the road, and a lot of my friends are fans, and that was not too good an opportunity to turn down. But over the 5 years at Leighton Orient, as you said, we won promotions, we knocked teams out the FA Cup, and we had a fantastic, and one of my best mates today, John Mackey, came in, took the armband off me because he was probably a little bit more vocal, a little bit more of a leader, but me and him to this day remain real good friends.
you mentioned the promotion and the FA Cup run, that you won at Fulham, you were in the Premier League at the time, didn't you, that season?
Yeah, we went there, and obviously beat Fulham, I think 2-1 on the day, and then we lost to, Charlton in the next round, and that was a game, again, if you was at the game, it was probably a game we could have won, you know, looking back on it. And I think Charlton went on to score a late winner, didn't they? Real late winner to knock us out, but we had chances to go and make it 2-1 to us, but unfortunately, the Premier League players are different, they're a different level, and we gave it our best shot, but that didn't happen. But to go there as a League Two side or a League One side at the time to knock a Premiership side out doesn't often happen.
Was that your first real taste of the FA Cup as well, a bit of the magic?
Not really. It came Exeter. We drew Everton at home. We drew 0-0 and obviously went back up to Goodison Park and we lost 1-0 up there. Nick Barmby, I think, scored an 86-minute winner, which is probably my first big FA Cup memory. And being clapped off by the Everton fans because we'd run them so hard, you know. I'm not sure had we beaten we'd have been clapped off, but obviously we give a good account of ourselves, and obviously being the fans they are and the quality fans they are, you know, they clapped us off, so that was something that I'll remember.
That season at Orient when you won promotion, you finished third, didn't you? Was you always up there or was it a late burst that got you over the line?
No, I think we was always in and around it. Obviously League 2 gives you a chance, doesn't it, because it's top 3. But we had to go to Oxford, and it was two different things for the club. Like obviously we was fighting for promotion. Oxford had to win to stay up, so obviously it was an even bigger game, you know, in terms of what Oxford, because you could go to a side that's got nothing to play for and things like that. But Oxford had the added pressure of having to win to stay up, and you can imagine Orient of Field. I think they took about 7,000 that day. You know, it was an unbelievable. They had the whole side at Oxford. We had to go round roundabouts the wrong way to get the coach into the ground and things like that. And yeah, it was one of them. And obviously we went 1-0 up, 1-0 down, I think. 1-0 down, we equalised. And then I equalised, and then Lee Steele got the winner. And the scenes were just, as I said, any promotion's unbelievable. You know, the feeling, it's difficult to describe.
What was it like winning promotion against a team that had gone down at the same time?
To be honest, we celebrated as you would, you know. It's not easy. It's probably a little bit somber because they're fellow professionals, you know, and it's not nice to, obviously being relegated can lead to people losing jobs and things like that. But at the time, I think you're so much on a hype, you sort of forget it. Maybe it's only a few days after you look back and think, like, well, people could lose their jobs, they might not get a new contract because of things like that, you know. But it's obviously exciting times for ourselves, who's going into a new league and things like that, so it's not something you can worry about at the time.
What was the secret behind Orient's success that time? Was it the close-knit of the squad that you had at the time?
Yeah, we had an unbelievable close-knit. We had a great bunch of lads. I don't think, if I'm being honest, I've ever really been in a bad dressing room, but we had some great lads in there. We had a good camaraderie. Martin Ling let us run the dressing room, you know, like he was a good coach, but he let us run the dressing room, didn't really get involved in anything like that, and but we went out and produced and we got promoted, which is obviously everyone's aim at the start of the season.
When players say let them run the dressing room, do you mean in terms of arguments that went on? Do you mean in terms of decisions that were made?
Yeah, just like, obviously, no, not decisions, obviously, because that boils down to the gaffer. But I think, like, you can have gaffers what get involved, want to be involved in your life. Lingy let us, obviously, do what we had to do and keep everything in order. You know, there was three or four of us who we trusted and keep the dressing room in order. And if people were getting out of hand, if there's a bad egg in there, you know, like, they'd be handed out and he'd sort of see it, you know, like, and they had to move on. But yeah, so just as I said, just let us take control of that dressing room, do what we've got to do. On Saturday, obviously he sets the tactics, he picks the team, but we was together, you know. So if he wasn't in that side, you knew you had to fight and things like that, and that's what makes a quality A team.
And I guess that time at Orient as well, you know, you then the following season they did avoid relegation as well, didn't they? So, you know, you've got to build on what you achieve.
Yeah, no, definitely going up there. There is, people say there's not much of a gap. There is a gap, obviously, between League One, Two, Conference. You know, there is a difference. And to go up to League One, I think they survived a few seasons in League One, which was great. And they even pushed after I left, even pushed a chance to get into the Championship, you know. So credit to the club. And obviously, from a side, obviously time goes by, you look back at all your clubs. And obviously what happened with Orient, they was on the downer, they was taken over by someone who obviously tried nearly ruin the club, you know. But hopefully they're back on the up and they're back in the leagues they deserve to be in.
Yeah, what do you make of Orient as a club now?
Look, it's a cracking club. You know, it's got their loyal fans. They take big support home and away. And it's a cracking club. It's come out of a difficult period, you know, so it's not all going to be winning the conference, obviously getting promoted. Then what happened to Justin is obviously a terrible shock, and they're going through like that little transition period. But if obviously they can survive their first season coming up from the conference, it's probably a successful season after what's happened. And then hopefully come the summer, I'm sure Lingy, Ross Embleton, between them can get it right and recruit the right players to obviously get them to the other end of the table.
I dare say the atmosphere at the Den is probably a bit different to the atmosphere at Brisbane Row, but I guess when you're winning at Orient, it's quite a good noise inside there.
Yeah, no, definitely. When it's packed, we had some great days. But look, at the same time, they let you know if you're not playing well, you know. So it's one of them. You have to be on your game, otherwise they'll let you know. And it's a cracking little ground.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
We mentioned Millwall there. That was obviously your next destination. That move come about. You was pretty happy to join a team that you'd watched as a boy.
Yeah, no, 100%. Obviously, when you're coming to an end of your contract, you hear rumours, and I had a phone call to say Millwall were interested, and I grew up in Elephant and Castle. Watched them, used to leave secondary school to go to away games and things like that on the coaches and stuff like that with my mates, go to the Den on a Saturday afternoon, and the chance to go and play in front of my mates and at Millwall was something I couldn't turn down.
What was the first few days like at Millwall and finding your feet around there?
Pretty easy, to be fair, because there was a great bunch of lads welcoming. I didn't get off to the best of starts there. I think I went 20 games without a goal, you know, like, so it was difficult. But one thing about my playing days is that I'd always work hard, you know, and I think that's why they stuck with me. And I went and scored a hat-trick on Boxing Day and probably never looked back. My ratio after that day was pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say that's quite a strange start for you, really, because it was probably the longest spell you went without a goal, I guess, in your career. And you must have wondered what you'd done wrong down there.
Yeah, no, I just couldn't hit anything, you know, like be disallowed, hit the bar, offset, hit someone else, you know, Joe just white. And you start to wonder where the next goal's coming from. But, you know, you have to stick with it and keep battling on. And as I said, I had a great bunch of lads around me. I was still being put in the team, even though I wasn't scoring goals. So I must have been playing some sort of role within the team to still be in it without scoring goals, because obviously my job was to score.
The following season, obviously, is when you first get to the playoff final. The year before, though, your first year at Millwall, was the aspiration for that season, was that to be in and around the playoffs at that time as well?
Yeah, 100%. I think if you looked at the squad when I joined, you still had you had the likes of Neil, Robbo, Alan Dunn, Tony Craig, signing a few. We signed sort of Danny Spiller out of Gillingham. He signed the same day as me. Andy Frampton, David Ford, people like that. All good players, all quality players. So I think we had like Lenny Pidgley, Mark Phillips, and the squad was there, you know, players that had all played at good levels, and I think the aspiration was there, and we all believed we could, but maybe we got a little bit too big for our boots, and it didn't quite happen. It was almost the same squad the following season, under different manager, which challenged for promotion.
I was going to say, was that the difference then, the change of manager, is that what made the difference the following year?
Sometimes it can be, you know, like I'm not going to slate Willie off. Willie Donaghy signed me for Millwall, you know, so he signed me and gave me that opportunity. But maybe sometimes you do need change, and obviously different ideas, different styles of play, different ways of playing, boys react differently. And the following season, it was, as I said, it was nearly the same squad with one or two additions that challenged for promotion.
We'll talk about the final and your goals shortly, but first of all, the semi-finals against Leeds, they must have been two games and a half to play in those two.
I think 0-0 at home, first leg, 0-0 at home, real tense, but the atmosphere obviously at the Den, 0-0 at home, really you want to go and win your home games, don't you? Otherwise you're thinking, probably fearing the worst, you know, and no one gives a chance going up to Elland Road, because obviously Leeds being the club it is, massive club, had some big players, some real big hitters, and no one really gave us a chance, but we obviously went up there, and 38,000 in that stadium, I must say, is one hell of an atmosphere, you know, and when they're singing their song, marching all together and things like that, it does really make the hairs stand up. And obviously went there, gave it our best shot. That Beckford never had the greatest of times ever against Millwall, you know, like at the Den. He missed a penalty that night. I'm sure he missed a penalty at Elland Road, and Jimmy Abdu popped up with the winner, and the celebrations were unbelievable. You know, we was going to Wembley for a lot of us the first time.
What was it like winning at Leeds and the celebrations? You done well to get out, I guess.
Well, as I said, for us to go there, no one expected it. You know, Leeds were the biggest club by a country mile in that league at that time, and obviously going up there knowing it's going to be 38,000 Leeds fans and probably 1,000 Millwall fans. And obviously being the squad Leeds had back then, no one really gives a chance, you know, so it made it even special. And it was a good day, but it was only half the job done, wasn't it? And if you go and obviously get to the final and don't win, it's obviously you look back and think, was it worth it?
Talk about the final then. Should we talk about the goal first? We'll do the good bit first. The goal. What goes through your mind when you clip the ball from that throw? I mean, if anyone hasn't seen it, get yourself on YouTube and look at Gary Alexander's goal against Scunthorpe at Wembley. You clipped a throw in. Was it just instinct?
Yeah, I think so. I think the throw-in came. I chased someone down in the corner, blocked it. Throw-in went down the line. Zach Whitbread headed it inside, and I sort of took it on my chest on the half turn. And look, you're always taught if you don't shoot, you don't score. And for me, there with 50,000 Millwall fans, I'm even going to be called all the names under the sun. I'll let you imagine people. Obviously, I won't say the word on here, but you can imagine if it had gone into the stand or it had gone wide or miles over, what I would have been called. But obviously the moment I struck it, it was on its way, you know, and probably never hit a ball like that ever again in my life. I probably never hit a ball like that before I struck that ball, and to do it on such a big occasion is, well, that is a dream.
Can you describe that feeling that you went through at that time?
To be honest, if it hadn't been a final, I probably wouldn't have played, because I had a perforated eardrum at the time and I was on tablets. My knee was pretty swollen, as obviously the physio could vouch for me. I see him in Vegas a couple of weeks later, and it was like massive. So I probably, had it hadn't been such a big occasion and the adrenaline get you through, I probably wouldn't have played. If it had been a normal fixture, I would have had to thing. But I got myself out there, and I think you see when I scored a goal, my reaction in the corner, it was so hot, and obviously being on all them tablets, having a perforated eardrum, it wasn't ideal, you know, and the boys jumping on you and I could barely breathe. I'm thinking I'm going to collapse here, but you know, the adrenaline gets you through at such a big occasion.
Yeah, obviously you scored two in the final, but I mean, that goal, how often do people talk to you about it?
It'll be remembered forever, won't it? You know, like, obviously it's one of them, we lost the game, and from a player's point of view, it's great I've scored that. It's a great memory for my kids to live off and look back when I'm gone, you know, and for generations to look back and say that goal was scored at Wembley, because I'm sure it'll be shown for years after I'm gone. But we lost the game, and I'd take a tap in any day of the week to win that football match, but it didn't happen, and you know, that's my memory of that day.
Greatest goal ever at Wembley? I mean, you've got to say yes, surely.
Look, any goal for me is a goal. As I said, look, I scored a lot of goals. I love scoring goals, and every goal I score means something to me. You know, like, it's what I was paid to do. It's what you dream of doing as a child, and it probably is my greatest goal. But look, I'm not one of them to blow my own trumpet, and I let other people decide that. And it's just a goal for myself.
You mentioned that's the overriding feeling. I mean, when you're on such a low after losing the game, was your low less than others because you scored a couple of goals? You've got that personal satisfaction?
No, I'm not one of them that says I'm gutted to lose the game, but on a personal note, I scored a goal. No, I'm devastated. I think you probably find me slumped on in Dulwich, big road where all the bars. I think I was slumped in a kebab shop just drinking until I couldn't walk anymore. You know, devastated with a few of my mates, what a massive Millwall fans. You know, like in Lordship Lane. Went back to the hotel, obviously, but there's no point partying. We haven't won anything. So I have a couple of drinks there, but obviously the season's over. Can let your hair down, but it was just pure. I missed a sitter for a hat-trick, you know, like could have been the first hat-trick, but that wasn't the reason, obviously, for me going out and getting paralytic. The reason for me is we lost, and you just want to try, you know, try and get it out of your system as quick as possible. But it was devastation, and sat there with a few of my good mates, what have been lifelong Millwall fans, and we just drunk and just chatted, but it was heartbreak.
Do you remember before the game the build-ups, all the emotions that were going on then, or is it just that memory at the end now that sticks in the mind?
I can remember leaving the hotel, getting on the coach, and obviously look, you have inklings of the team. Are you playing, aren't you playing? You know, I might be starting, I might not be starting, because again, we had some good forwards at the club at the time, and it was one of them. But I remember the first time you drive down Wembley Way on a coach and all the fans are there, and it becomes surreal. You know, like, you growing up, obviously when we was young, the FA Cup used to be screened on telly, and they used to show the old coaches going down Wembley Way and seeing all the fans waving flags, and it brings a tear to your eye. You're like, wow, these people are actually here to support us, you know, like we need to produce for these, and it's an unbelievable feeling.
Following year, you obviously get back to Wembley for the playoff final, an unused substitute that time, I think I'm right in saying. Is that something that hurts that you didn't get on that time?
No, not really, to be honest. I think I stood on the sideline for about 7 minutes waiting to come on and the ball wouldn't go out. But no, I was grateful to be involved that season because I got injured. I got injured early on and I had a bad heel injury which kept me out for most of the season. I didn't even think I'd be able to get involved, and just to be involved at the latter end of the season and to make the bench was an added bonus for me, you know, like, because there was players what missed out. I'd missed out a lot of the season through injury, which probably spelt the end of my Millwall career, if I'm being honest, because I didn't get to play a lot that season because of injury. And even at certain points at that time, I was 29, there were surgeons refusing to do the operation, saying it could end up in retirement, this, that and the other, and it was a risk I had to take. So the injury, no one sort of knew what it was, and retirement was even contemplated there.
How hard was that to hear surgeons say that, you know, you might not play again?
Yeah, obviously not nice, you know, like, obviously at 29 you think, like, someone's got to do it, but they was obviously, it was too risky and up, but eventually we found someone, Millwall sent me for every bit of treatment you could think of, you know, like, to try and get this injury, to the bottom of this injury, but we just couldn't get there, and I came back, it went again, you know, like, and it just became difficult, and then eventually somebody did the op, I came back. Obviously didn't get as many games after that for Millwall. Kenny was honest with me. He said, look, we've signed Morrow, Steve Morrison. Playing time might be not as much. And having been told probably a couple of months earlier you might have to retire, I want to play as many games as possible. And there was an opportunity to move on. You know, it was heartbreaking because I probably had unfinished business at Millwall, having ended the season on a high to the next season being such a low. But the lads obviously got us through that. Got me through it, and as I said, I've made many great friends and a lot of Millwall fans who's still in touch and things like that. It's a great club.
The game at Wembley then is your last game for Millwall, albeit you don't come on, but could you feel the contrast between the year before and that one?
Yeah, obviously, listen, you set out to start the season to get promoted, don't you, you know, like, and we had that. As I said, I'm not that type of person. I want people to do well, you know, and for the boys to go and get promoted, I was still part of that. They made me feel part of that the whole season because I'd go to games, and as I said, to even make the bench was a bonus. Obviously you'd like to come on. I was coming on, but the ball wouldn't go out for whatever reason. It wasn't going to be my day, you know, but obviously winning that, we went and partied the night away, and obviously I was part of that squad, and that squad made everyone feel welcome, whether you was in it, whether you wasn't, you was part of that team. And I think that's what it takes, character to lose a Wembley final and then to go and win the final. We've seen teams get relegated the year after losing a playoff final and things like that, but that just showed the sort of characters we had in that team.
I assume your celebrations didn't involve a kebab house in Dulwich again that time?
No, it involved getting pissed and giving Kenny Jackett a bit of a stick, like, but all good fun, you know, for longest substitute ever, longest sub stood there never to come on, you know, like, and a bit of fun, we was having a bit of fun and we had a good laugh. But yeah, obviously can't remember much about the night because you're obviously paralytic, you go to sleep with your medal on, you don't want to leave it, and I think you drink till you drop when you win promotion. But yeah, no, that was, as I said, look, fantastic times.
How long did those celebrations go on, but also knowing that the end was coming for you at Millwall?
I wasn't aware then that the end was coming. Obviously, I went back and done pre-season. It was pre-season I left, but between myself, Neil, Alan, Robbo, Fordy, Framo, TC, I think we was out for days, to be honest. There'd be texts going around, are we out tomorrow yet? Yeah, we're out. And we'd meet up the Bickley and end up all days in the garden and things like that, and there were celebrations for days, you know. And we was lucky to sort of, we had a few fans what absolutely loved the club, what owned businesses, what sponsored the clubs, what would come out, and we was mixing with them, you know, like, they'd come out and say, are we going out? Yep, we're going out. And we was out for days, you know. So it was a license, obviously didn't go down too well indoors, but I suppose you don't get promoted every day, you know. So it was, yeah, we made sure we celebrated.
You left Millwall and ended up at Brentford. How did that come about then?
To be fair, it was on Chopper's testimonial. Kenny called me in, and as I said, Kenny was always honest, and he said there'd been an offer from Brentford. Andy Scott, someone I'd previously played with, had put an offer in to sign you, and that's when he obviously said, look, we've signed up a forwards, game time will be limited. I could have stayed and sat on the bench and collected my money, but having been told I might have to retire, it was a case of, I want to play as many football matches as I can before the end of my career. As I said, that you get to 500 games, it's very pleasing. I think I went on to play another 200 or so games when I left Millwall, which I was over the moon with, having been told at 29 it might be over.
That year at Brentford, you were back at Wembley again for third year in a row, but you lost in the Johnson Paints final.
Yeah, third year in a row, obviously Johnston's paint final. We lost 1-0 to Carlisle, I think it was. That was a big day because Kev O'Connor had been captain for the whole season. Andy Scott had gone by then, and Mark Warburton and Nicky Forster had taken over, and obviously Kev's a Brentford legend, and he still is to this day, and he's still working at the club, and what a great lad, you know. And I was told that I'd be captain that day at Wembley, and so again, that's probably another dream. You play over the park and you pretend you're walking out of Wembley, you know, and so to captain a side at Wembley is something that I could never dream of, and I never thought it would happen, and it did that day. Obviously disappointed not to lift the trophy, but that was a massive day. But on the other hand, it was a sad day for myself because Kevin captained the club for so long and didn't get to captain his club at Wembley.
What's the emotion that you feel when you walk out of Wembley and you're at the front of the queue?
As I said, words can't describe it, you know. As I said, growing up, used to watch cup finals, used to see big players standing at the front of the tunnel leading, so all of a sudden I'm leading the side out of Wembley, and it's something, well, you can only dream of, but it happened to me. I'm lucky enough it happened to me, and it's something I'll never forget. To say I've captained a team at Wembley in a cup final, is there's not millions of people can say they've done it.
Defeat again, though, you were wondering what was going wrong.
Yeah, it wasn't my lucky ground, but Carlisle, obviously, I think we turned up, maybe we was probably favourites for the game. Carlisle, I think, scored early. I think it was ahead of the centre half, who we'd already earmarked as a danger. I think he might have scored a header. We had, I think, Jeffrey Sloop playing for us at the time. He had a glorious chance, still today, so I haven't seen him. He's at Palace now, I think, isn't he, Jeffrey Sloop? And he was me and him up top. He's had a shot, he should have squared it to me for an open goal, but he never, and that would have made it 1-1. But you know, it's a great trophy for the lesser teams, for a chance. It's almost the lesser teams FA Cup, isn't it, you know, in terms of a chance to go and play at the National Stadium in a big cup final. And I know some people write off, but for us what play League 1, League 2, it's a chance to go and play at Wembley. Why wouldn't you do it? And look, we lost, and as you said, it wasn't my lucky ground, Wembley. It was, from a personal point of view, it probably was because of the goal I scored. But as I said, I'd rather take a win and not score that goal. Wasn't to be. We won the following year with myself on the bench not coming on, and then every other outing ended in defeat for me at Wembley. So it wasn't my luckiest ground, but dreams came true for me to go there. As I said, millions of people can't say they go there and play. I've been lucky enough to go there 4 times, have that ride down Wembley Way 4 times, sit in the dressing room 4 times, and go out on the pitch and warm up and play in front of thousands and thousands of people.
How special were those 2 occasions at Wembley, though, given a year, 2 years before you're told, you know, your career's in the balance, you might not play again?
No, as I said, look, when you leave, I was heartbroken to leave Millwall, but it was for myself, my own personal gain, to go and play as many games as I could. I didn't want to be remembered as somebody who sat on a bench and didn't play. I want to be remembered as somebody who's played hundreds of games, and if you hit that 500 mark, I think you're going to be remembered, and you'll always be down in history as a 500 sort of league game player, and I am that. So I take great pleasure in saying that, you know, like 500 league games at 17, I didn't even think I'd be a footballer, you know. So to go on to have 500 league games is special for myself, something my family can look back on, my kids can go and look back on it, and it's an achievement in itself.
Was you playing in pain in final years in that time?
I think as you get older, I think we all know aches and pains start to come, and it takes a little bit longer to recover, you know. But obviously I retired at 34. I think I knew the time was up. If I'd have carried on, I've had some ankle ops and that in the past, and obviously knees, and I struggle with my knee now. I still love to be able to play, and I'd join in training every now and then with the boys, and I had a couple of runouts obviously for Greenwich. Well, I played for Greenwich for a while, but I think the time was right to stop playing at that level, that intensity, training every day. I've got 4 kids. I need to be able to obviously see them grow up, be able to do things with them, entertain them, play with them. If I'd have carried on playing, I'd probably be struggling to walk now.
One more move I did want to talk to you about was going to Crawley, and Steve Evans was manager. Is that right when you went there? How did that one come about, and what was it like working for Steve, obviously now involved down at Gillingham?
Steve, you'd rather be with him than against him. Again, I was at Brentford. I was top scorer. I was offered a new deal, but I wanted 2 years at the age. I was 32. I wanted a 2-year deal to see me through. Brentford were only offering me 1 based on appearances. I got told of the interest in Crawley. Had a chat with Uwe Rosler. He wasn't too happy, obviously, that I wanted out. But I said, if you score like 14 goals in 22 games, surely you're deserving of a new contract, you know. And obviously that contract was offered. It was quite a big, obviously, pay cut. Fans didn't see it like that. I actually went to Crawley on less money than I was offered at Brentford, but for the 2 years and stability for my family. Brentford fans didn't see it like that because they was chasing promotion at the time. It was seen as a bust up with Juve Rosler, but I've seen Juve since. We've shook hands and we had words beforehand where we did fall out, but we obviously, sometimes in football you have to do what you've got to do for your family, and everything I do I try and do it for my family, and that was the reasoning behind that. And I ended up signing a 2 year with Steve. And as I said, Steve Evans is one of them. If you're playing against him, he can bug you, and you end up concentrating on him. But if he's with you, he takes that off you, and you can go and relax and play, because everyone else worries about Steve, you know. So he's a cracking character. I'd played against him for many a year. I remembered having a row with him when we was at Leyton Orient. We played Boston away, and Lingy and obviously everyone, we had a massive row with him, a massive argument. And when I signed, he went, "I'll never forget that day you called me whatever you called me." Like, and it was one of them. I went, "That's football, Steve." He went, "No." And we got on really well. And he's actually a cracking fella. He doesn't come across like that. A lot of people who don't know him go, "Oh, he's a complete," you know. But Steve is a top, top man.
In the dressing room, was he a great motivator before games?
Yeah, he's a great motivator. He could get in your face and liven you up if you weren't playing well. You know, I've seen him get very close to people's faces. And he's a winner. He's got the right receipt for getting results, isn't he? He gets results. His record speaks for itself. So no matter what you think of him, no matter what you think of his style of play, no matter what you think of him as a person, his record speaks for itself. He wins promotions, you know, like, and that's why he gets jobs after job after job, and he gets good jobs, you know. So as I said, you need to know him to realise the fella he is. He's actually a cracking fella.
Who was the best manager you played under, would you say, Gary?
As I said, look, I was lucky to play under some big names. I love Brian Little at Hull. I love Brian Little. Then I was Colin Todd, that I've played under Harry, who's got a record. I don't think I've come across a bad manager, you know, like obviously Kenny, Juve Rosler was very thorough. Kenny was great, and I don't think I've played under a bad manager or I can bad mouth them, to be honest. I think every one of them has their own style, has their own way of doing things, and you know, whether you like that, whether you don't, whether they like you, whether they don't, they've always been fair. That's all we can ask for as a manager.
Obviously you've since got into management at a lower level, albeit, but at what point you've had a possible retirement scare midway through your career towards the end, and then your body does tell you it's time to pack in. At what point were you thinking of going into coaching or management?
Look, I was doing my badges from the end of my career. You sort of start doing it because football's all you know. I didn't know anything else. So that was my life, getting up, going to play football, getting up, going to play football, go home to bed, getting up, going to play football. That was my life. So you've got to start thinking, what can I do after football? And there wasn't a lot I could do after football because I've played football for 17, 18 years non-stop, and it's hard to change that way of life, you know, like it hurts, it still hurts today to think that you'll never play football in front of thousands of fans again. You do have dark moments where you think about it and you're like, well, I wish I could play, but you can't. And did I go too early? Didn't I go too early? You know, and you look back on things like that, but you start doing your badges and you obviously go and bump into people. And when I retired, I got home, I said to my missus it was obviously time up to go after we lost at Burton in the playoff final. I said that I've had enough. There was a few bit of interest. I chatted to Barnett and people like that, and I just said no, it's not to be. And then obviously I got in contact with Greenwich Borough, where you could just train twice a week and go out and play with no pressure on you and almost go and enjoy my football. And again, going to do that, I met some great people and some lads what had played non-league for most of their careers, you know, and you get to see the other side of it, which was fantastic.
So you didn't go there initially to be the manager, did you?
No, I went there to play. I played, obviously, went there and loved my time. As I said, I was playing with like Joe Vines, Charlie Vines, Aaron Day, you know, like people who had quite long non-league careers. And we went there and had a cracking time, and we had again great bunch of lads, and you sort of got to see how non-league is, you know, under Jenko. Unfortunately things didn't work out. I was probably the most experienced player there in terms of playing at levels and things like that, and I got a phone call to offer me that job. It's difficult obviously when somebody loses a job, but sometimes it's your gain, you know, and I had to take that opportunity.
And obviously it didn't go too badly for you because you did win promotion.
I think the season Jenko had took us so far in that league, and then we actually went out. I think Jenko was sacked just before Christmas, and we had Hollands and Blair were in front of us, and we managed to close the gap up and get promoted that season and get out of that league.
What was promotion like compared to being the manager and before when you was a player?
We still went mental. Listen, any promotion means something. Winning any cup means something. You know, I'm going to celebrate whether it's winning League One titles to winning Southern County titles. I still celebrate the same. It means something. It's a memory, because you might never have played at that level. That might be the highest level you ever play at. So you have to make sure that you celebrate that. And for me, it's no different. I'd celebrate if I win the South East Counties title 1 year with Glebe or with somebody else. Who knows? It's something that I'll celebrate. And listen, I celebrated like I celebrated every promotion.
Is it frustrating how it ended at Greenwich, because you know you built it into something that you know really could have gone somewhere?
Yeah, obviously it's disappointing, but you know, things happen in football, and things, circumstances change. Obviously getting a phone call to say that a big director had passed away suddenly made life difficult, and you have to give Perry credit that he tried to carry it on and he battled, you know, but sometimes it becomes difficult. And I don't think Perry, he wanted to do it for the love of his brother, to keep it going, and it becomes difficult, you know. And in the end, it probably couldn't carry on how it was going. It had to level itself off, and obviously it did. And it come a time where obviously I was told it was difficult, because I was told I needed to get rid of a couple of players and things like that, which is, look, that's no problem for me as a manager to get rid of people. But if I'm being told I have to get rid of them when I've shook hands on deals with these players, it's probably not right, you know. And I work with Perry again now, you know, like, and so we have a relationship. When the Glebe job come up, he called me up and said, would I be interested, you know, like, and it was one of them. He knew the time was probably right for me to move on and obviously leave that club where I'd left it. I'd probably took it as far as I could in terms of how things went and relationships we had, and it was a great shame. And obviously you would have liked to have seen it carry on, because who knows where we would be today. You've only got to look at teams like Dorking Wanderers who are flying. We was on a similar path to them, but it wasn't to be, and that's football.
Goodridge's loss was Ashford's gain, though, because it wasn't too long before you ended up down at Holands.
Yeah, no, literally I think a couple of days after I was going to take a break, but I got a phone call off the then manager, Jason Whitball, called me up. He said, look, do you want to come in, help me out with a view to take the job at the end of the season? I went and met Jay, had a chat. We had an instant sort of relationship. We got on really well, and we finished that season. As you do, you go in, you start to plan. Players had to come and go. We built a hell of a team between us. Obviously, it was cut short through not Jason's fault, through whatever reason it was. I won't mention it, because I'll probably get in trouble. It was cut short. But you only had to look at the team of the decade. Seven of the players, look, I managed to sign at Ashford, made the team of the decade, and go back 10 years to the last 2 years, seven of my players are in that team. So that gives me great pleasure, you know, like, that I can attract that sort of player to go and have that influence on a club.
I was going to say, how do you look back on your time at Ashford now?
Yeah, listen, great, great, great club, great people, great fans, and the club will probably never move forward while a certain person's in charge. It'll probably always be similar while he's there. I was warned before I took that job, be careful. But as I said, I take people as I find them, and I was willing to give it a crack. Personalities clashed, and that was that. And you get a text in at home at 10 o'clock at night, you know, so to say you're sacked, if you're not man enough to speak to my face, then that tells me the exact person you are, you know, like, because that's just cowardly. And I haven't seen the fella since. He'd probably hide if I see him. But, you know, if he's not man enough to sack me face to face, then I don't have a lot to say about the person.
What was that like, getting that text that evening? You was watching I'm a Celebrity as well, wasn't you?
Yeah, I was laying in bed, and we just won 4-0. I think we'd won, that was the fourth game on the bounce we won. And I looked down at my phone, and I had a text message, claimed he had a missed call. I showed so many people my phone, there's not a missed call on that phone. And I had a text to say, your services are no longer required. But I was told by fans previously, be careful, we had lined somebody up. And again, I'm not going to mention no names, but being the person I am, let him sack me, it put me in a better place, it made me a better person. And yeah, it was almost laughable. But as I said, look, for me to see seven of my players in the team of the decade, I've still got some good friends at Ashford who still text and still tweet. They've even come down to watch us play Glebe teams play, you know, so they obviously respect me, I respect the fans. I just clash with one person, and that person will end up ruining that club.
How much of a learning curve was it when you're going into management and the two experiences you had there at Greenwich and at Ashford? Did it make you grow as a person as well?
Massive. Look, as I said, I'm one of them people that will judge for myself. When I told certain people I was going to go to Ashford, I went and took Ashford for Jason because I had an instant relationship with Jason. Still to the minute I was driving down there, I had people ring me up, be careful what you do, be careful what you do. He's a wrong one, he's a wrong one. Not meaning Jason, meaning somebody else. And I judge people where I find them. I found that the hard way. I got sacked by Tex, as I said, cowardly.
Doesn't put you off management though, clearly, because you're back in it.
No, look, I had some time out. I was offered a job. I went nearly a year scouting for Millwall's first team. You know, going to do player reports, watching games from our level, Ryman Prem, South East Counties, all the way through to Scottish Premiership, Championship. You know, like driving around the country, flying up to Scotland, watching games, doing reports on players. So I wasn't out of football. But Neil knew that it was always a case of that if a job came up and it was right for me, I want to coach, I want to help people. I've seen people like Mo Issa go on and like obviously make it. Jack Barham, Danny Parrish, we've helped, you know, like, and they're all going to go on and have half decent football careers, Mo especially, you know. So hopefully we can get a bit more of that, you know, out of Glebe, and we can go and get some success at Glebe in the years to come.
Yeah, Mo's obviously gone to Peterborough now. Are those players in and around non-league football, are they still there, the little gems?
100%. There's obviously, it's about getting the opportunity. Some of these boys just need to go in and train every day, because if you train every day, you become a different animal. You get up to speed with them, you get the fitnesses. You look at clubs now, they've all got sports scientists, they've all at non-league, where it's difficult to train 2 days a week at a non-league club and say, yeah, I'll go gym every day. It's completely different. They will have specific training schedules for these players to get to peak fitnesses and things like that. But as I said, Mo took his opportunity, got the chance to go and train full time and become a different kettle of fish, you know. So he's took himself to a new level, and there's lads out there in the league we play and in the league above, and a lot of non-league what have got the capabilities of being a pro. It's just about getting that opportunity.
And the players that you're now under your tutelage, what are you like as a manager? How do you keep a tight ship?
I'd like to look, players have come back and played for me, so I like to think I'm all right. I think as a manager, like I said to you, you only want people to, whether you're telling the truth, whether you're not, do things face to face. I'd never release a player over the phone unless obviously they couldn't come to a meeting and things like that. I'd rather speak to them, I'd rather give them my opinion. If they don't like that opinion, that's up to them. They can give me theirs, no problem, but they can't go away and go, oh, he rang me up and got rid of me. Listen, I always end it with a handshake, because you never know when you might cross paths again, and you might need them, they might need you, you know. So I try not to obviously fall out with people, and just try and be honest along the way. If I need to get rid of a player, I'll be honest, give him the reasons why. There's no comeback if you give them a reason why, is there? There's no comeback, they can't go away, they can call you what they want, but you've been honest.
Rocky probably won't thank me for asking the question, but do you have aspirations to manage at a higher level?
Obviously, but first things first, I have to do a job for Glebe. I think Rocky knows that's obviously my aspirations to hires. As a player, my aspirations were to play as high as possible and to have the career I've had. As a manager, it's no different. You want to manage as high as possible, but I'm in a job at the moment where I've got a chairman what's ambitious, what wants to get promotion, wants to keep going. If we get up a league, perhaps he wants to go to the next league, you know, and he's grown that club from one club, one team, to, as I said, over 20 and now first team what plays in competitive leagues, and that's credit to him. So how far does he want to go? Only time will tell, but I'm at the helm. I've got a job to do here. If it leads to bigger and better things, Rocky's the type of character what will be probably happy for myself to say, well, he helped Glebe go to here and he deserved the chance to go higher, you know. But at the moment, I've got to concentrate on that job.
Go on to the quickfire questions next. First one won't be so quick, though, because I know the answer. But your chance to move abroad during your career, you could have gone to Australia at one point.
Yeah, I had an opportunity 2009-2010. I hadn't been offered a new deal by Millwall. It's quite late. And obviously you start to worry, where's my next job, where's my next job? There was interest from abroad. I was obviously could have gone there. I had Perth Glory, Wellington Phoenix, and that come over. Met them in hotels up West End, contract talks, agreed things and all that, and was all set to go and pulled out last minute.
That was just because you didn't want to leave the family?
Yeah, obviously leaving the family. Look, mum and dad have been a great support for me over my career. I've got one sister, I've got kids, obviously, leaving your kids behind. George was only young, wouldn't have been able to fly out to Australia on his own. Mum and dad have been to just about every game I've played in, even now, to non-league. To this day, they still come to grounds where you don't expect to see them when they turn up, you know, so that I think they might have struggled to come to Australia. And it, although sometimes I look back and think, probably should have given it a go. Was it the right decision not to go? Yeah.
Normally I ask best goal in football, but I think we've covered that quite extensively, so probably second best goal in football.
I don't, if I'm honest, I've scored some important goals. I don't really have a favourite, you know, like I could look back and go, like I said to you, you can look at a 30-yard volley and go, yeah, what a goal. But like I scored in that day, we got promoted at Oxford. I went for a dink the keeper, scoring a last minute winner against Leeds, which puts us into the playoff pack. And things like that, little goals like that, scoring your first goal at Exeter in the league, I can still see myself going through and slotting it under the keeper, you know, like, and that's your first ever league goal. And so I scored some important goals. So to be honest, I don't have a second best, I don't have a favourite goal. I enjoy seeing my goals. People send you them on Twitter and you look back and go, cool, forgot that one, but cool, I like that, you know, like. And so every goal I scored is my favourite goal.
Yeah, do you forget how good you were?
You said how good I as I said, I don't judge myself. I let people judge myself. And obviously, look, there's people out there what rate me. There's people out there what have called me donkeys. That's football, and there's always going to be opinions. So, you know, some people think what a player. Some people think I'm crap. Some people might not have an opinion. But, you know, I've played 500 Football League games, and so people can think what they like of me. I'm too thick-skinned to worry about haters. At the end of the day, they motivate me, you know, like, so people can hate, people can love, but I'm just a level, like, I just want to be seen as a level-headed person.
Best friend in football?
Probably John Mackey, who obviously been my assistant. He's in the job at, obviously, Potter's Bar. He was with me at Greenwich. He came to Ashford, used to travel from Hertfordshire to Ashford to support me, and he's probably the person I speak to most in football. Non-league-wise, probably Paul Springer is one of my best mates. Met him 20 years ago in Cancun when I was holidaying Hull, you know, like, was having five-a-sides. We bumped into each other, and we've never looked back. We speak every day. I will say, does my head in ringing me at 6 o'clock in the morning, Springer, so stop it. No, I'm only joking. So, as I said, look, John Mackey from probably my professional days, who I get on really well with and have a great relationship. We talk football, we have laughs and jokes, and obviously non-league, and as a friend, Paul Springer, who happens to have played non-league all his life.
Apart from Wembley, best ground that you've played at?
I used to like Highbury. Highbury was really nice, like playing in the floodlit cups, unbelievable stadium. Played at Goodison Park, is a ground that I really like. Hillsborough, Ellen Road, you know, like, there's some of these old grounds, you know, like, you can go to some of these new grounds and the atmospheres aren't great and wow, you know, like, but some of the older grounds and the older fans will realise what Hillsborough means a lot. Obviously, it's got history, hasn't it, and things like that. So stadiums like that mean a lot, and there's some cracking little grounds in non-league, you know, like, you go to places like Macclesfield and Lincoln, and like Lincoln used to play like a war siren when they got a corner, and they're little things that you sort of remember, you know. So there's some cracking little grounds and real tight grounds, horrible grounds, you know. So just to play at these grounds is a thing. I don't have a favourite, if I'm honest, but as I said, there's a lot of cracking grounds out there.
Best player that you played against, or the toughest centre back that you come across?
It'd have to probably be one of the Premiership teams when you play against them. The toughest one I've probably played against is probably played with me, but he was just horrible to play against in training. Like, is like Gabby Zakawani. Like, we was with him at Leighton Orient, but I used to make sure if I was a captain, he was first pick. You know, like, I'd get him on my team because you could be playing on fit on a Friday, but injured by Friday afternoon. You know, he'd go through the back of you. But it's someone like that. But obviously, in game situation, I think toughest opponent. I was lucky to score against them for Brentford when we knocked them out of the cup, but Distan and Jagielka played as a centre half pairing, and people look at people, Titus Bramble and people like that, people look back and go, "Coy, he's rubbish." They've played 500 Prem games, they're different levels, you know, like, and you can see they're different levels. Phil Neville played centre midfield that night, you know, like, and just different kettle of fish. They're unbelievable footballers, and so, like, just players like that, they're all different, they're a different level.
And finally, best strike partner, who's the best forward that you've played against, who brought the best out of you, Gary?
When me and Neil played, we've scored some good goals combining with each other. Laurie Dudfield at Hull, we formed a good partnership. He created a lot of goals for me. I think I had about 19 before Christmas, and he'd take a claim for a lot of them. Leighton Orient, we had Lee Steele, we had a good understanding. So again, it's a difficult question because I don't want to have one person. You know, I've played and had partnerships with many people, so I couldn't just say one person's outstanding, because I've got probably my most successful is when I scored most goals, probably Leighton Orient, Hull, so Laurie Duffield, Lee Steele, Neil. I really enjoy playing with them three.
Gary, thanks very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure going down memory lane with you, and a great career, and wish you every success in the road down management now.
No, thanks for inviting me on. Pleasure, anytime.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.